Thank you for watching Conscious Consumer Network. The live stream broadcast is free to view. You can pause and rewind live broadcasts to catch up, or view shows at a later date by accessing our free archives of all shows. Check out our broadcast guide to see what's on. You can show your support by donating to our network support fund. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, or subscribe to the monthly newsletter for updates. We thank you for supporting free and independent media.
And ladies and gentlemen, welcome to our latest installment of Unspun, episode number 31. I'm your host, Jan Irvin, with my co-host here, the infamous Joseph Atwill. And today we have a really excellent topic. Nothing like tracing back the history of modern pedophilia and its promotion in society and the media and normalizing it and the legal system and all else. And this is a subject that I was actually wanting to do a show on the Gnostic Media podcast about, two or three years ago. And I reached out to a woman who had done a documentary film on Kinsey's pedophiles. And unfortunately, she never reached back out. So thankfully, Joe has done some great research on this topic. In fact, he's probably going to do most of the talking tonight because he did all the work this week. So anyway, welcome everyone. How you doing, Joe?
Just fine here in the pedophile kingdom. We do the best we can. Today we're going to talk about Alfred Charles Kinsey. He was a biologist by training and became what he described as a sexologist. He was really the very first one to actually apply the term, and he applied it to himself. He founded what's known as the Institute for Sex Research. It's at Indiana University. And he's really well known for, you know, a bunch of reports on sexuality. And then as Jan has the Wikipedia stuff up there, you can see that he wrote Sexual Behavior in the Male and Sexual Behavior in the Female. So Kinsey himself was a pervert. He would, from a very early age, he would place objects up his urethra, and he various sizes and various degrees of danger to his member. But he said he did this because he felt that he had to punish himself for homosexual urges, which he thought were inappropriate. So this was basically kind of the background of his perspective. And he's really very famous for, and Jan, can I have my screen back? I need to.
I already gave it back. Is it?
Didn't oh, no, there it is. Thank you. Yeah, I got it now. sorry. Anyway, so he is unto himself. He's really not very powerful. His ideas and his scientific methodology really haven't been followed by many people. In fact, I would say today, even though he's had influence, it's more just through kind of a rote following of different psychologists to his conclusions. You're not really having a lot of continuation of his methodology. And this, of course, is easy to understand because it's generally illegal. What Kinsey did was he would have pedophiles record their experiences with young men. He'd actually have them write down what the experience of the child was during.
You said young men. I think
children. I'm sorry, I misspoke.
Pedophiles go after children and
right,
even
infants. Right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, this is not a Greek culture. This is pedophilia. So he would have these individuals write their experiences down, and then he would categorize them by how he interpreted the pedophile's description of the of the child's response. And then from that, he would then create conclusions about the sexuality of young children, which from which he would then extrapolate and create these broad constructs, which we're going to go into later on as to how they've been actually applied in our legal system. But so he had in his research a definition of orgasm, and this is of young children now, which included screaming, writhing in pain, hysterics, convulsion, fainting, and then trying to strike the partner, in other words, the adult rapist. Now, these are not, you know, my biased, you know, reworking. I mean, these are the terms that he would then record, right? So you can see you've got a really, really sort of evil individual. And I just want to, I'm going to get back to this in a second, but I'm going to go into other areas before this. But I want to talk just about his relationship to Aleister Crowley. Because one of the things that just absolutely amazed me is that Kinsey would ask pedophiles to basically write their experiences into a diary, and then he would take the diary and he would use it for what he called science. Now, he had a relationship with Aleister Crowley. He actually knew him. And what is just incredible is that he wanted, after he lost touch with Crowley, to, through people who knew him, to obtain his diary. So in other words, even though there isn't the pay requisition, there is a really good chance that Aleister Crowley's pedophilia activity was something that was being paid for by Kinsey. Now, I can't prove that. I can only deduce it from the facts, from that the fact, and these are very simply that he did pay pedophiles for their diaries. And he did try to get a hold of Crowley's day-to-day sex diaries. So those facts, and you know, when we go through some of the other associations that Kinsey had, showing that he was dirty and that this was basically, he was part of a project, make it very clear to me that that his relationship with Crowley was professional. So now, this is, Joe, yeah.
Let me interject something of importance here that, sure. You know, because Crowley comes up just about on every show, as do so many of these guys. So let me give you another one who often shows up in regard to Kinsey that we talk about in just about every show. Can you guess who it is?
Kenneth Anger?
Oh, you're close, but it's even better than that. It's this guy by the name of Gregory Bateson.
Oh, God, I didn't know that.
Who helped, of course, as we've exposed many times, who helped, of course, to found the CIA. And, you know, so this is right in there. We, you know, Ken Kesey was funded by Rockefeller Foundation. He was also a Satanist working with or knew Kenneth Anger. Of course, Kenneth Anger, a famous Satanist who was influenced Anton LaVey and was the creator of the Process Church. Was behind the film Lucifer Rising that, you know, was with Mick Jagger and all of these people. So, I mean, this is, we're right back in the same little tight-knit group of people that we're exposing all the time, you know, and apparently associations with Time Life magazine, we can probably find a write-up of him on the cover of one of them. And, of course, Henry Luce was one of the gang.
Yeah. That's absolutely very insightful and absolutely correct. And so, you know, one thing that I do as a literary analyst and a social observer is I look for patterns, things that are very unusual that repeat themselves. So that
you mean like Gregory Bateson?
Yeah. And so here we have Bateson. And then, of course, knowing that Bateson was, you know, advocating the archaic revival, which of course would include or be self-evident that it would, you know, a higher level or of a broader kind of social.
I think you mean native revivalism. Don't forget it was Terence McKenna that.
I just use the terms interchangeably because I don't really see any difference between them. And I think that McKenna had, there's zero chance that he didn't get the concept from.
I fully agree
with
just
you. But I mean, you're right. And thanks for the correction. But that's just how I choose to express, because I just don't see there being any chance that McKenna could possibly be using the expression in a way other than Bateson. And this is irrespective of all of this direct conduit that produces McKenna that comes right from Bateson. But anyway, I wanted to get back, to go even further back, is that, okay, so one thing that is just, was again, just shocking to me is that, and Jan mentioned the funding from the Rockefeller Foundation. Now this just is very, very common. You see this so often in the cultural debasement programs that, I mean, how could anyone get funding for such ideas? Well, it's through the Rockefeller Foundation.
Now, or through the CIA. We have to give credit.
There, exactly. But what was fascinating to me is the pattern of, and I'm just going to switch gears slightly from the depravity of Kinsey's sexual research. And it is just absolutely sick, right? It is just as sick as anything imaginable. But I think that had it just been his production of his research, it would have just been stillborn. No one would have paid any attention to it. He would have obviously just been seen as a complete crackpot. But of course, Time and Life magazine, you know, gave all this publicity to it, glowing reviews. You had, you know, all of these individuals that are always there with the counterculture, you know, promoting it, that were lining up in back of him. But the thing that simply astounded me was his connection into Franklin Roosevelt. Because you'll recall, Jan, that this sort of all began with Edward Bernays and the play Damaged Goods. At the beginning of the 20th century, there was, I think around 1910, there was a play called Damaged Good, which was put on by Edward Bernays.
Of course, we did a episode called Damaged Goods, so people can follow more on that as well.
And it was amazing. It was funded by the Rockefellers. But what was astonishing was that in the audience were the Roosevelts there to promote this, the onset of the sexual debasement. And so when you look at Kinsey, you know, well, how in the world does this sexologist link up with Franklin Roosevelt? Well, it is astonishing, but Roosevelt had a, what can be called as a confidential assistant. He's a legal scholar. He was with Roosevelt all the time. He was actually probably the individual who most worked with FDR in terms of the law. And his name was Herbert Wechsler. Now, Wechsler was from Columbia University, the hellhole in Manhattan. And he worked with a group, what could be described as a legal cabal, I'm going to talk about them in a second, to promote Kinsey's research into law, into influencing our legal system. Now Wechsler is just a wrecking crew in and of himself, because he's really the one who changed the whole nature of jurisprudence in the United States, because before him, basically, attorneys would study to be, they would study criminal law. They would be there to help promote the control of crime. But Wechsler decided that social advocacy was something that the law should take on. And of course, this was just a cover story for raw debasement of the culture at every single turn. And one of them was the change in the laws that basically decriminalized and made it impossible for communities really to set up strict moral standards in their particular sovereignty. Before that, before this, you would have, you could, if you wish to outlaw or make criminal certain sexual behaviors, that was something that was part of your sovereignty, which after all, the Constitution does not have anything to say about this. And it has the clause saying that powers that are not expressly described inside the document belong to the states, belong to the local sovereignties. Now, of course, I can just hear people screaming, well, criminalizing homosexuality, this is wrong. Well, is it? What about democracy? What about having some kind of power to be basically to affect moral privilege, right or wrong, inside your own community, inside having some control over your own community? Before Wechsler, the little sovereignties, the counties, the cities, the states, had power. All of this started to get eroded with Wechsler's approach to this very, very broadly interpreted penal code that he was trying to have everyone set up. Now, Wechsler worked with other individuals. It wasn't just him. Wechsler actually took on, Wechsler launched his basically crusade to insert Kinsey's sexual degeneracy into the United States with an article he wrote in May 1952 in the Harvard Law Review, right? And it was called The Challenge of a Model Penal Code, right? After this, then this organization that Wechsler set up to basically promote Kinsey, it sent a model penal code to state legislatures. And this was, of course, this broader concept by which the states and the counties and the cities would no longer have the ability to create moral standards or to have any control over them. They would have to basically follow the guidelines that had been set up, by the federal government. So it's just the same guys over and over again. Jan is showing them all up. Here they are.
We should just a second, because what the organization that they're using to push all of this stuff through is primarily NAMBLA. And so this ties into a lot of things, because we have Allen Ginsberg, who of course was the MKUltra Greenwich Village team in New York that we've already exposed so much of. And we have the NAMBLA organization, but another famous member of NAMBLA that really ties into everything is Peter Lamborn Wilson, who lives out in Woodstock, New York. And Peter Lamborn Wilson has created this notion of the temporary autonomous zone. And basically, these are zones where they're unlawful, or they're law-free zones, basically where everything goes. And this is exactly what Burning Man is, out in the middle of the desert, in fact. But Peter Lamborn Wilson was associated with John Perry Barlow from the Grateful Dead and associated with Genesis P. Oridge, who's involved, of course, ties right back to Aleister Crowley, William S. Burroughs, Anton LaVey. I mean, here's Kenneth Anger. Here's Terrence McKenna again. Again, the same exact group of people that we're talking about. But these temporary autonomous zones are really important, because what they would do is set up these areas to try these things where anything goes, essentially. So I guarantee you that their tiptoe approach will be trying to bring a autonomous zone into play, if they haven't already, for the promotion of pedophilia.
No doubt about it. And I wanted to mention that if you look at the temporary autonomous zones that are being, they're being promoted, there's no doubt that pedophilia would be, top on the list of like what's going to be able to be permitted in these areas. But notice how you've actually come almost 180 degrees here, because at one point, the population had control. The local population had control. They could make morally restrictive laws as they saw fit. And now they have, this has been eroded step by step. And this finally is the just complete giving up any kind of ability whatsoever, because the temporary autonomous zone would have no control whatsoever. In other words, you know, you wouldn't even have the moral right of a parent to defend your child that had wandered into the area from pedophiles, right?
So, hey, Joe, you know what I just realized? Tell me if this would be another name for a temporary autonomous zone.
Well, we can only hope that...
And ladies and gentlemen who are listening to the audio version, I'm showing the Wikipedia page for Sodom and Gomorrah.
Right. Yeah. So this is like just from someone who sits and watches the structure of our law. When you see the onset of the temporary autonomous zones, what you're seeing is the successful conclusion of the do what thou wilt program that Aleister Crowley was instrumental. And of course, you can see the relationship, the direct relationship with Kinsey. And also the complete end of the actual constitutional powers that the citizen had. Right. I mean, in 1950, that was only, you know, 66 years ago, that the citizens of towns had the power to affect moral perspectives. They could choose what they saw as proper moral behavior in their area. And if someone didn't like it, they had the ability to leave. Right.
They could go to a place like the Maverick Festival.
They could go to the Maverick Festival and just do whatever they wanted. But notice now you've had this 180 degree, destruction where now they can't even say anything about these areas that are being set up. Well, anyway, getting back to Kinsey. So Kinsey was this complete crackpot and degenerate, at least as best, you know, can be described, the best that you can make of this individual from what is known. But he became an icon not only in our culture but more importantly in our law. And he ran afoul of a woman named Dr. Judith Reisman, and that heroic individual really started to bring out one that Kinsey's science was incorrect. It was a crackpot just coming up with things. And two, it was criminal because he was using the notes from pedophilias, right, to make his quasi-scientific, conclusions. But she also pointed out that he had been promoted legally. There was an absolutely clear-cut effort led by Professor Herbert Wechsler, okay, who was the confidential assistant to President Franklin Roosevelt. And if you go into that relationship, you'll see how close this thing was. Well, anyway, so Dr. Reisman named the group that then worked with Wechsler, that Wechsler assembled, to promote the legal change that would basically make would decriminalize just every kind of, make it impossible to make legal structures against sexual activity. And she described them as a cabal. That's her words. And so they included a New York judge, Morris Plaskow, a journalist, Albert Deutsch. You had authors who followed up with more crackpot sexual concepts, Morris Ernst and David Loth. And then you also had actual crackpot doctors, Dr. Manfred Guttschmacher and Dr. Harry Benjamin. And this group was what she called the legal cabal, because they produced articles. There was journalists. They worked with
You're talking about another one of the Well, you're talking about one of these cells that cites each other back and forth, just like Wasson and Gang, etc.
Exactly right. Exactly. This is exactly as the cells that you've exposed so well in spies and academic clothing, where you talk about how the cells reinforce one another, where one person will write a paper, another person will cite it glowingly, then a third person will refer to the second two articles as basically established and settled science. And then the three of them work in an intimidating form against anyone who raises, you know, their voice against them. So it's a technique to change both the social perspective and the feelings of empowerment that citizens had. And it's also, you know, was done to just bloody well change the law. Now, this group, interestingly, are all Jews. Very, very unusual. We went and did research to determine that because, you know, why would this group decide to actually promote a crackpot like Kinsey? You know, that on itself is a mystery that needs some kind of explanation. And I'm just passing it along to the listener for what it's worth. But what they did was is they basically created the Kinsey cabal, created a hit list of 52 crimes and legal subjects that they wanted to get rid of or radically revise the citizens' ability to protest or to make laws about. And that included both statutory rape, prostitution, bestiality, indecent exposure, obscenity, child adult sex, and pornography. I mean, imagine a world where pornography was illegal. They also, oddly enough, promoted opium and other narcotics, wanting to have those legalized as well. So this was, you know, kind of how Kinsey entered our world, because his science, in my opinion, is simply too absurd to have any impact. No one incidentally has followed his footstep. No one uses Kinsey's sex diaries methodology. You'd be laughed or, you know, you'd be arrested. But nevertheless, it was what was the basis for his research, but it wasn't the research. It was the use of the crackpot research as a cover story to implement laws which facilitated cultural debasement. And so that's really, when you look at Kinsey, what you're looking at is someone who is, in my opinion, he's clearly an agent. Now, why would I say that? Well, I mean, look at the pattern. This is how I judge him. The funding from the Rockefellers, the association with FDR, the relationship with Aleister Crowley. And then you have the pattern, the one that Jan described, where a cabal of intellectuals are set up to promote bogus science. You see, this is the pattern that you see from Bernays all the way through Terence McKenna, all the way through, I mean, just you name it, Gregory Bateson. You see this pattern in effect, and the conclusion that I think the citizen needs to have from this is that, look, it's an attack. The idea was to break down, to atomize the family, to atomize the individual, to promote sex as a mental distraction, to legalize it in a way that would both reduce family production and also make a more impotent individual. This is... this is kind of where we're at now. Remember, culture is always moving, never sits still. And believe me, the people who are in control are just getting started. So they are no doubt moving. I think the goal now is to normalize pedophilia. If you look at articles that are being written, NAMBLA's political power, they're trying to normalize it as something that can be discussed, like it's just a normal human condition.
Yeah, yeah. And they've, you know, this NAMBLA and these people have to have Central Intelligence Agency funding behind them. I mean, we have the ties.
For
we
sure,
have
yeah.
The same people tying into Burning Man and the psychedelic community and Woodstock. They have to be getting funding because it's part of the same agenda that we see across the board.
Right. And so Kinsey came up with, you know, statistics which were not then replicated by other studies. I mean, he said that, for example, in his study that 70% of men had been with prostitutes. 40% of women had been unfaithful during their marriage. And incredibly, over 70% of them claimed the affair hadn't hurt their marriage. And a few said that it actually helped. And so 10% had been homosexual for at least 3 years, and nearly 20% of farm boys had experienced sex with animals. Now, you know, when other researchers followed this path, they couldn't get anywhere near these numbers, and yet these numbers were used as the legal rationale, for law changing, you know, the 10% of our culture that was supposedly homosexual. Well, I think now the number may be actually more than that, but in 1950...
Because they've normalized it and promoted this metrosexual...
Exactly.
You have all of the soy with the phytoestrogens and everything.
Exactly.
Low-fat diet, the low-cholesterol diet,
yeah,
which, of course, affects testosterone production, et cetera. So...
Sure. You put out a culture with Bruce Jenner as getting awards for heroism.
Right. I've got to correct you on that. I swear it's Bruce Jenner.
I stand corrected. you get characters like that coupled with the, destruction of the body, whereby testosterone isn't produced in normal amounts.
And I mean, look at all these commercials on the radio and television, you know, telling me, are you having erectile dysfunction? Do you need testosterone, et cetera? I mean, men, go eat some eggs and bacon and steak and stop taking the testosterone pills. That'll fix your problem in a few days.
Yeah. And but anyway, so, you know, here again, you have the pattern that we have seen over and over again. Bogus science promoted by the cultural influencers. Kinsey's book sold like over 200,000 copies first 3 months, just an enormous bestseller. His name was everywhere. There was a pop song about him, right? And then if you look on the pages of Lifetime, Newsweek, and the New Yorker, for a period of like 10 years, he was like the second or third most common named individual in their text. So this was how they, you know, they infused Kinsey into American culture. Now, it's interesting, another kind of strange connection that occurred to me was, you know, I put forward the idea that, you know, one of the rationales for MKUltra can be found in the authoritarian personality, which is available online. It was produced by the American Jewish Committee and had a great number of individuals who were connected into the Macy Conference, which was basically the precursor to MKUltra. And in if you read chapter 23, which is the conclusion of the authoritarian personality, you'll see that they call for a use on a mass scale, right? There it is. And then you see chapter 23, if you keep scrolling down at the conclusion, you'll see they call for an amalgamation of all of psychological sciences to be used on a mass scale, basically to influence the Gentile. They created these bizarre scale systems, personality testing of ethnocentrism, which just, you know, in their definition, just means Eurocentrism. The AS,
which was only to measure genteel ethnocentrism and not their own.
They're not curious for some reason in determining that.
Right. They don't want to talk about the apartheid state called Israel.
Yeah, that stuff doesn't get mentioned, but you definitely have what's called the AS scale, the anti-Semitic scale. Well, anyway, at the conclusion, you know, if you read that, I think it's very important for citizens to be aware of that that document request in chapter 23 of the Authoritarian Personality, because I think that that's a very, very likely basis for MKUltra. Because so many of the individuals involved in the production of it end up being referenced in the MKUltra science. In fact, one of them, Nevert Stanford, was simply, you know, an MKUltra psychologist. He's one of the authors of the work. But I just wanted to mention that, okay, so they had this request that there be this mass scale of psychological techniques used against the Gentile to basically protect Jewish interests. But they conclude the chapter 23 with a very, very cryptic comment, which I wondered when I recalled it when I was reading stuff about Kinsey. And basically it said that that using sophistry, and I'm paraphrasing, but this is what it means. It says using sophistry, it says that, I have written it down here. It says, we need not suppose that appeal to emotion lies with only fascist propaganda, while democratic propaganda must reside only in reason and restraint, right? So in other words, it's basically saying that, it shouldn't just be fascist propaganda that can use sophistry and clever rationales, right? It says, if fear is the major emotional source of fascism, Eros belongs to democracy. So a little cryptic, but
Joe.
Yeah.
If you, go back to that infamous Edward Bernays quote, do you have it handy where he's talking about that, from the first page of Propaganda?
No, I don't. I could probably paraphrase it, but I don't.
I'll pull it up here just to, for the audience that hasn't heard that, because it does put it into context, if I can find it here. But
yeah, see if you can find it. But I'll just finish my thought here.
All right.
So anyway. So it goes, appeal to emotion. In other words, a sophistry, psychological kind of maneuvering of people to get them to agree with your idea. It doesn't only lie with fascist propaganda, while democratic propaganda has to be sort of impotent, and not being able to use any of this stuff. And so the next line, which concludes the whole project, very important. He says, if fear is the major emotional source of fascism, Eros belongs to democracy. And you see, what that actually means is, in the context of established by the line above it, is that, the people who control that are called fascists use propaganda that is rooted in fear.
Let me just read this quote here, Joe.
Yeah, go ahead.
Back to you. And this is from Edward Bernays, who, of course, was the father of propaganda, working with the CIA and Army, etc. The conscious and intelligent manipulation of the organized habits and opinions of the masses is an important element in democratic society. Those who manipulate this unseen mechanism of society constitute an invisible government, which is the true ruling power of our country. We are governed, our minds molded, our tastes formed, our ideas suggested, largely by men we have never heard of. This is the logical result of the way in which our democratic society is organized, at least by the elite, and it's supposed to be a republic. Vast numbers of human beings must cooperate in this manner if they are to live together as a smoothly functioning society. In almost every act of our daily lives, whether in the sphere of politics or business, in our social conduct or ethical thinking, we are dominated by the relatively small number of persons who understand the mental processes and social patterns of the masses. It is they who pull the wires which control the public mind. And that is from page 1 of Edward Bernays' book, Propaganda, which, of course, is a famous book published, what, in the 1930s? So,
yeah. Now, so getting back to the conclusion of the authoritative personality, they're saying that, fear is for fascism. Now, they can use that. That's their approach. We, on the other hand, the democracy, which of course they're just laughing at, because right above they talk about using mass scale psychological techniques for the control of the population. We're going to use Eros. So in other words, Eros is identified, if you kind of, very closely analyze, what the meanings are of the author of these words. Eros is identified as the primary propaganda technique. And then of course, notice that one of the individuals, I don't think he was with AJM, but he was definitely with the Frankfurt School, who worked with this group, was Herbert Marcuse, who wrote Eros and Civilization, right? So Eros becomes this calling card of propaganda that is going to be used basically to control the population. Kinsey fits directly into this this concept, as does basically the free love movement, Aleister Crowley, all of these other things. You can see, we've covered at this point many, many times, that sexuality was basically the primary hammer. That was how they were going to turn the mind, so that they would give you, instead of a culture that you could basically reside with dignity inside of, and have a life of meaning as you participated in it.
Especially family, to interject.
You would have a family. You were going to have sex, drugs, and rock and roll, right? So how did that all work out, those of you who are in your 60s who had the sex, drugs, and rock and roll and then had nothing else, you see? So this was a... It was just a technique to turn your mind. Now, when you have the internet world, which they created for control. I mean, remember, if you look at Stuart Brand and the whole trajectory from the Merry Pranksters into
and ladies and gentlemen, you can go to my series with Steve Outram on the history of the right. Secret history of burners with the Presidio up in the Bay Area and the military funding all of that, and we're still producing. I've got two more shows recorded with Outram that we'll be releasing ASAP.
Right. Anyway, so if you just follow that this trajectory, what you end up with is the internet and pornography. And I have seen statistics that indicate like higher than 30% of the amount of view time on the internet is of pornography. So. And it is now, I think, well established that pornography damages normal human sexuality. It makes normal relationships almost impossible. Yeah, Gary Wilson.
Why don't we reach out to him and bring him on this show?
We really do need that. I agree completely, because this is just such an important point for people to meet.
And I know he watches our show, or at least my show sometimes. So, Gary, if you're watching, give me a shout out.
Yeah, well, I definitely want to have him on. I think that would just be fabulous, because people really need to be aware how destructive pornography is to their psychology. But anyway, this was known. You see, the people who created it knew exactly what they were doing. I'm telling you, we were analyzed and down into a test tube-like structure. One thing I would suggest people should do, if they really want to see to what extent we have been analyzed, is go to the authoritarian personality and look at the detail of the personality tests that were created to determine, who was anti-Semitic, who was Eurocentric, who had the potential to become a fascist. You see, if you look at the detail of psychological parsing that they're doing, you can then understand that this group then goes on and with this understanding, they produced basically the personal computer and pornography. Because, William Sargent, who was an MK Ultra monster, he wrote a book called The Battle for the Mind. And that was a very, very apt title, because what has gone on is a battle for the mind. Unfortunately, the forces of good have not been participating. The battle for the mind was simply the secret society that controls America's government and media and finance. They studied the psychology of their subjects, us, in great detail and with great energy from before Freud, but certainly from Freud forward all the way through MKUltra and the sexual revolution. So they had a 70-year period of, if you look at the projects, if you look at the funding, if you go through it step by step, you can see that the battle for the mind was raging. And what was really going on was an attempt by the oligarchs to determine exactly the methods by which they could control population.
Sure. Now, Joe, just let me interject here. What I have on the screen here is over the last probably 3 or 4 years, I've been mapping out the key things that they are using via William Sargent's book, Battle for the Mind, and this Fourth World Wilderness Conference. I had George Hunt on the show about 5 years ago to go into the history of that, and he had actually been at a meeting where this was all being discussed, and he brought it out, and then again was on my show years ago. But we have, of course, psychedelics, Course in Miracles, abortions, alien abductions, and ancient aliens and assassins, birth control, critical thinking removed from public schooling, of course, Black Macho, which you've done the research on, destruction of the family, destruction of the middle class, the environmental movement, feminism, the feminization of men and the masculization of women, fluoride in the water, the Gaia hypothesis, gay rights, geoengineering, global warming, GMO, gun control, promotion of homosexuality, the use of informal fallacies or sophistry, the low-fat, high-carbohydrate diet, the pop culture music, neo-shamanism, the new age, pedophilia, pornography, positive thinking, which I've covered in my interview with Dr. Barbara Ehrenreich, who actually worked at Miss Magazine, ironically. I wish I had known that when I interviewed her. And psychedelic revolution, psychiatry, quantum physics, the sexual revolution, soy, because it's so high in phytoestrogens, of course, sugar and fructose, et cetera, being pushed heavily in the SAD or standard American diet, and the Council of Nine, transgender, actually the trans everything, transvestism, transhumanism, UFOs, vegetarianism, the promotion of wheat, of course, Woodstock, and world citizenry, the global citizen as coined by Marshall McLuhan.
Right. And I think that that's a great list, and it should be basically part of the primer that is given to children when they learn how to read English, because that list is basically a very good start to understanding, how we have gotten to a situation where, the top 0.1% achieve, 90% of the income gains in our nation, and how it is that with all the technical advances between 1950 and today, that, at that point, a husband could have an ordinary job and have children and a stay-at-home mom, whereas today, after this these technical achievements, now both parents need to work 50 hours and they still can't afford a mortgage. So,
and meanwhile, they tell us we're still coming closer and closer to this utopian society where the man and woman will just be able to stay at home and the robots will take care of everything.
Right,
ladies and gentlemen, you'll be the robots.
Yeah, exactly. And just bear in mind, Jan is not, it isn't a witticism. I mean, the whole idea of cybernetics was the idea of coding the human mind as a computer. And this comes from the Macy Conference. And once you understand what lies in back of the Macy Conference, once you understand...
Hey, Joe, look at a couple of our favorite people and topics show up right there. We get the Tavistock Institute. Here's Terrence McKenna. Poor victim Ted Kaczynski, who got caught up in that and tried to blow them all up. But look up here, and who do we see here? This guy we haven't talked about for a few minutes.
Gregory Bateson.
Gregory Bateson. Good old Gregory Bateson.
And it wouldn't be two leaps to get into the Grateful Dead and to just everything else. So, Jan, that was absolutely fantastic recitation of the areas that have been used against us. And the list, it seemed very long, but believe me, if you gave us a couple days, we could make it like three times that size. So you can see that the project to basically control humans as robots and to debase them, right, is very, very vast. The secret society that controls the government, the finance, and the media, It is vast and has thousands of inhabitants, and these people run these projects. So this is the task of democracy. You can see that it's a very complicated one, because we really need to first know who is, and it's not this hard, because they are somewhat.
Well, Joe, and let's remind the audience that a democracy is rule by the mob. It's not a republic, which is rule by the people.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right, and so this is a challenge to the citizen, to all of us, this is Kinsey. You can basically see him as a kind of a cultural relative of Aleister Crowley, someone that was used with his pseudoscience, his crackpot data and methodology, was used by people who had in mind the destruction of the family.
In other words, this is mistake. This isn't happenstance.
This isn't happenstance. This is not possible. This is, in fact, a program. It is designed to destroy the family. And what will come of it will be basically the stratification that Huxley describes in Brave New World, where everyone who is not on the inside will be a delta or an epsilon. We are losing our intelligence. We're losing our physical intelligence. We're also losing our capacity for thought, because there is no training in logic that's going on.
And please, ladies and gentlemen, check out, study the Trivium, triviumeducation.com. I've been putting that out for, 6-7 years now.
Yeah, learn the fallacies and also learn how to use rhetoric, because if you do that, you're going to be a lot more protected against the sophistry and the mind control that's going on all around us. Because what's going to happen... and I think you're going to see, I'm going to look into the future of our culture. And I will suggest that you'll have the NAMBLA political will manifest, and you're going to have, the autonomous zones first. And then after that, there'll be basically an ending of the, all pedophilia. To understand how...
And then we'll be back in ancient Greece with pedophilia and the Eleusinian Mysteries and the whole bit.
Yeah.
So they'll turn back history 4,000 years,
Exactly right. And remember, that was a slave culture. So what I would hope people would do, one piece of information is read Pedophile in the Rye. It's an article I wrote about Catcher in the Rye. Salinger was, dirty. He was inside the deal. He was an OSS member. He wrote a book, Catcher in the Rye, which is a thinly veiled homage to a very vicious kind of Freemasonry. But inside it, he also created what can be called neurolinguistic programming tract that will take the reader to basically have pedophilic impulses. So yeah, there's the article. And so this article, you know, will help you, you know, realize that the idea of the onset of pedophilia as sort of a cultural norm. I mean, folks, this is a part of a long-standing project. And so when you notice that there's just been a lot of publicity, you know, about this, these pedophilic rings, you know, these circles. And of course, there's a lot of accusations that the elites are engaging in the activity. Well, you know, all I can say is if you look at Salinger and if you look at the connection between Kinsey and the media manipulations, man, it's a pretty straight shot. And anyone who doesn't sort of understand that that's a component of the attack that's being waged against us is really not alert. Everyone needs to understand this, that we are being transitioned into a pedophilic culture. I mean, there's going.
Well, it's a total degradation of culture. It's a neo-feudalism where it's just a total debasement intellectually, physically, promotion of drugs you know, new age spiritual beliefs, the whole bit.
It's a cesspool. It's a moral cesspool with the individual atomized, and
it's a global Sodom and Gomorrah, to bring it full circle, you know.
Yeah, actually, that's quite right. The idea is to have no area of the globe where culture exists that could in any way be threatening to the oligarchs. And they know that, you know, if the families don't get created, not only are the individuals not a threat, but they are very easy basically to extinguish because they're only one generation away from extinction anyway, since they're not producing any children.
Right.
You know, I was at a party the other day and I was talking with these people who are my age, you know, they're in their 60s, and they were saying, gee, you know, it's so strange, there's no grandchildren. Yeah, they're all commenting on that. You know, it's so odd, there's no grandchildren. I mean I remember growing up, you know, we had a grandparent, and they were all just kind of, and none of them would take the step and ask the question, it's like, was this a design?
Or, well, you know, and look at it and their own responsibility for it. Why don't we have grandchildren?
Exactly. Yeah, you know? Exactly. And so there it is, you know, we're basically a dying race. Actually, we're not dying. We're a race being murdered. And the population doesn't have the intellectual understandings to know where the blow is coming from, to know who's delivering it, and to have any defense against it. First step, you know, number one, try to improve your thinking. Try to learn how to identify fallacies, and also to, see the relationship between grammar and logic. Just get a better grip on how ideas and issues are meant to be formed.
Always, here's an easy way to approach this, Joe. Always approach any new topic as though you are incompetent. And then from there, ask the simple questions, who, what, where, when. And then once you have that, you can understand why this stuff is going on. And then you can explain how to someone else.
Exactly. And if you, it's such a simple process, but if you do it repeatedly and methodologically, you'll just start to do it unconsciously. And then you can defend yourself against sophistry, because a lot of what we're, you know, we're just given bad arguments and we're, you know, because we don't know how to think, we accept them. But then you also have to work on the other thing, which is the neuro-linguistic programming. You know, we always harp back to the May 1957 Life magazine cover, you know, where you have above the Gordon Wasson's MK Ultra project to begin the psychedelic revolution, you have teenage allowances, as the title of the so-called topic above. See, there is teenage allowances, and then notice great adventures. So this is neuro-linguistic programming. This is MK Ultra. This is basically coding the mind of the reader to associate the mushroom, taking the strange visions of the mushroom with teenage allowances and great adventures. You see, they
absolutely
they're coding us with this material. So Jan, it's just flown by, and I'm glad we were able to bring out some information about Kinsey, because even though he's just an absolute...
You almost said Kinsey rather than Kinsey, because we exposed...
it's like, well, Kinsey, Kinsey. But, you know, the thing is, it's what's really sickening is that he's still taken seriously, and that has to stop. And so, folks, look...
And we didn't even get to tie that into... you know, Wilhelm Reich and Margaret Mead, who promoted the sexual revolution after that, which is just another branch of this same promotion. So at least we have to throw that in. Of course, Margaret Mead was, we haven't mentioned Gregory Bateson.
I haven't mentioned Bateson in so long.
So of course, you know, she was his wife or ex-wife or, you know, et cetera. But Joe, I think we've only got a few seconds left here. Do you want to give out your
website? Sure. By Caesar's Messiah, by Shakespeare's Secret Messiah. These are books that I think will give you a good understanding of the culture. Attend caesarsmessiah.com. There's going to be a lot of changes in the website over the next month or so. So hope everyone looks at it. And I highly recommend my favorite website is Gnostic Media. Jan, why don't you tell us about that one?
GnosticMedia.com. All of the archives are up there. The CCN show archives, my show archives. There's lots of work up there with Joe as well. And our mutual articles together. Please donate, support the website, also support CCN, the network. Thanks so much, everybody. See you next week.
See you, Jan. Thank you, brother. Talk to you. Bye-bye.
Conscious Consumer Network was designed to create a live broadcast TV network for free and independent media and has been live on the air since the 1st of January 2015. CCN gets millions of minutes watched every month and is viewed in over 140 countries, having produced around 1,400 shows and counting.
And you know, it's very hard to get on mainstream media, of course, the corporate media that's getting tighter and more monopolized and more restrictive for any outside information.
The live broadcasts are free to view and all shows are archived in high definition on YouTube. CCN plays host to a stellar team of broadcasters and producers, all of whom rely on the network to get their message and information out to the world. CCN has continued to evolve, constantly seeking to create greater media usage and opportunities for both broadcasters and viewers, including supporting projects such as the newly launched ConsciousCommunities.org, a brand new social media platform that is free to use and has been created for those dedicated to the pursuit of freedom, justice, peace, and sustainability to come together and co-create the solutions to a better world. Due to the constant heavy usage, we are in need of replenishing and replacing of key hardware and infrastructural wear and tear. This includes the fixing and replacing of parts of the live broadcast equipment system, as well as increasing storage capacities for content and projects. Without this, CCN and its affiliate projects will simply not be able to continue. Conscious Consumer Network is a publicly funded project, and it is up to you all to keep CCN on the air.